Hello. This is a third lecture in this series, and in a sense, it finishes a certain line of reasoning. So last time, we looked at various approaches to what algorithm is, what is the nature of algorithm. And today, we take a particular approach and formalize the notion of algorithm. I'm happy to have Charles in the audience, and Wes and Bart should be here in a minute. So let's go. So we'll speak about sequential algorithms. What sequential algorithms? So traditionally, from the beginning of time to 1950s, 1960s, it's hard to tell when this period was over. Algorithms were sequential algorithms. There were no other algorithms. Furthermore, not only they're sequential in the sense they go through sequence of steps, but also there is a certain bound on how much can you do in a single step. Later, the notion of algorithm broadened to include parallel, interactive, distributed, and so on, as one of viewers suggested, also quantum algorithms. So an informal definition of sequential algorithms can be taken to be the following quotation from the famous mathematician Kolmogorov. Algorithms compute in steps of bounded complexity. Note that in this definition of Kolmogorov, algorithms are transition systems. One of the viewers criticized one of the approaches I mentioned last time, when you have two programs and they give the same algorithm. And it's hard for me to argue with him because I'm on the same side. I presented this approach because it's out there. I certainly don't support it. To me, algorithms are transition systems, like for Kolmogorov and Turing. And this is by far the mainstream in the theory of algorithms. In the rest of the talk, algorithms are such traditional sequential algorithms, which compute in steps of bounded complexity. So what about formal definition? That is our main goal today. In addition, we will define abstract state machines, and we will prove the representation theorem, namely that every algorithm is faithfully represented by an abstract state machine. We will define abstract state machines of the sequential type with steps of bounded complexity. There are others, more general machines to fit broader notions of algorithms, but today we stick to sequential algorithms. I see I got a little bit ahead of myself. I thought about natural question arises, what about more general algorithms? And I should say that the whole thing, the axiomatic definition of algorithms, abstract state machines, and representation theorem, everything generalizes, but that's beyond the scope of today's lecture. So why to do that? What does it buy us? So I see two main purposes. One is theoretical. The notion of algorithms is the key notion of computer science. There's no doubt about that. It's sufficiently important in itself to justify an effort to elucidate it, to understand it well. And the result of this elucidation should help us to elucidate other important notions. And then there are applications, mostly to software specifications. Okay. 2/3 of my audience just arrived. Let them catch up. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we give an axiomatic definition of algorithms today. And that's justification why we do that. So the axiomatization will be given by means of three postulates. Their names are sequential time, abstract state, and bounded exploration. And the lecture builds upon an article at 141 on speaker's webpage. It is a little uncomfortable to speak about one's own work, but one tends to to be a bit biased. So, but I'll try my best to be objective, and viewers are invited to critique and comment. And mostly critique, that I'm especially interested in critique. Okay, so we're going to the first algorithm. It's all about sequential time. So essentially the algorithm says that the postulate says that an algorithm is a transition system. So an algorithm is associated with a set whose elements will be called the states of A, and there is a subset of initial states and a transition function which I will call next, which given a state gives you the next state. So, in addition to real audience, I have an imaginary audience. Some fellow by the name Kwizani, who from time to time asks questions. Maybe I should explain this. I write dialogues. I have a column on logic and computer science in one of European journals. And for the purpose of those dialogues, I invoke a former student of mine by name Kwizani, who quizzes me from time to time. So he says an algorithm should be run from any state. What's the point to have special initial state? And in many applications, initial states are needed. So for example, the purpose of an algorithm may be to compute a function. And then it's important to start in the initial state where you have the proper input. But we don't exclude case when every state is initial state. Mm-hmm. So the set of initial state is a subset, and it could be the whole set of state. So one of the viewers asked about distinction between algorithms and functions, and the notions are really not that closed. So functions don't have to be algorithmic. So for example, you may consider a function, say, American voter, and who he voted for, or maybe he didn't vote at all during last elections. So no algorithm would be able to compute that function. But as a function, it's well defined. There are algorithms that do not compute any particular function. Think about an operating system, you know, the most obvious example. But even if you have an algorithm that computes a particular function, then that function is only the input-output part of the algorithm. And there are many more aspects, many more to an algorithm than the function it computes. How it computes it, how fast, and what are data structures it uses, and so on. For our purposes, a state is terminal if the function next state is undefined. So one can classify terminal states much more finely. So for example, is it terminal because of an error or it's terminal as intended? But today this classification will not, final classification will not be needed. So we'll say that two algorithms are behaviorally equivalent if they have same states, same initial states, and the same next state transformation. And the representation theorem says that for every algorithm, there is an abstract state machine which is behaviorally equivalent. It has same state, same initial state, same transition function. We have yet to define abstract state machines, but we can formulate already the representation theorem. And so my Cuisani wanted to know why this behavioral equivalence is so fine. It's just exactly the same state, exactly the same states and the same steps. So in applications, you may be interested in much more coarser equivalences. For example, you may say two algorithms are equivalent if they compute the same function. Or there is a notion of bisimulation. You may say two algorithms are equivalent if they are bisimilar, or their computations are bisimilar. And there is nothing wrong with studying coarser relations. But notice, what do we need our behavioral equivalence for? So it appears in that representation theorem, and finer the equivalence, stronger the behavior. Stronger the representation theorem. So we don't say this is the only equivalence on algorithms that we have, but that's a kind of the basic, very basic equivalence, and you may also study coarser equivalences. So my Cuisani has another question. If finer is so good, finer the better, then why do you ignore what happens during one step? Maybe we should look up what happens during just one step. So that you should do even that one step, you should do sort of in a similar way. And indeed, that may be important. And there is a recent generalization of the story that what I'm telling today, which takes account on intra-step details. Okay. But today we're not going there. And interested viewer can look up article 201 at my website. So given the first postulate, so what remains? So an algorithm given by states and the next state transition function. So what remains is just essentially two questions. What are the states? And how to ensure that states have bounded complexity? And what does it mean, bounded complexity of one step? Bounded complexity of one step computations. Typically, complexity, say time complexity, is in a number of steps. You count steps. But here we speak about something totally different, the complexity of one-step computation. So the next postulate is called abstract state. But before we go there, we need some material from mathematical logic. So in logic, there is a very important notion of structure, which was given the current form by Alfred Tarski in 1930s. So a structure is a set. So if a structure X, then it will be a set often called the base of X, the basic set of X. And this set is endowed with some functions and relations, or functions can be called operations. These are basic functions and basic relations of the structure. So basic function has the form, so y is f of x1 xr, where the arguments and the value are elements of the base set of the structure. So if your structure is arithmetic, then this may be numbers, and that is a number. Functions may be, R is the arity. So you may have a unary function, binary function, ternary. You also may have nullary function, which takes no arguments. And such nullary functions are often called constants. Basic relation has a similar form, except the values are true or false. The relation can be true or false. The names of the functions, of the basic functions and relations, form the vocabulary of the structure. So here's an example, arithmetic. The base set is natural numbers. Natural numbers are non-negative integer numbers. Now, vocabulary may depend what do you do, what do you want to do with your arithmetic, but here is one typical vocabulary. You have constants 0, 1, binary function, addition, multiplication, and relations, equality, and less than. Now, this is just vocabulary, and each of the symbols needs to be interpreted in the structure. Now, in this case, the interpretations are sort of obvious. Now, for our purposes, and in order to be closer to programming practice, let's see, what is the difference between relation and function? So function takes value inside the structure, and relations take value true and false outside the structure. Now, in programming, typically, you have true and false living just Boolean constants. So we will restrict attention to structures with equality, which means, what does it mean? It means that equality always is present in the vocabulary, and it's interpreted in the standard way. And there are three distinct constants, true, false, and also undef. And there are usual Boolean operations, negation, conjunction, disjunction on this Boolean universe, true and false. So what it buys us that now we can forget about relations. Relations are just special functions, happen to be Boolean valued. And we also can deal with partial functions, because traditionally in logic, functions in structures or operations are total. But now, when we have this undef, we can make them formally total, but essentially partial. So I'll give an example. So let's take arithmetic, the one we saw a slide ago, and add three more elements to the base set. So there are natural numbers. And aside, there are three additional elements, true, false, and undef. And, of course, the question arises, what is 0 plus true? It doesn't make any sense. Okay. So we can impose type discipline, and we usually do. But in fact, it's not necessary. We just declare that the answer is undef. So it's sort of formally defined, but in fact, undefined. And in fact, we can extend our arithmetic with division. And again, what is 1 over 0? Undef. Now, if you look at arithmetic structure, I said the base set of numbers. Now the question arises, what's number? Say, what's three? And in fact, mathematicians don't have a good answer. So, and turns out for mathematical purposes, it is not really important what three is or what five is. It's important how these numbers behave with respect to arithmetical operations. So in other words, mathematicians abstract from the nature of elements. Okay. So you can think about elements in various ways, but it will never matter. It's only important that 3 plus 5 is 8, whatever they are, those numbers. But if this is 3 and this is 5, 3 plus 5 should be 8. And mathematicians have a way to formalize this idea of abstracting from the nature of elements. Only structures remain, by means of the notion which is called isomorphism. So suppose we have two structures, X and Y, of the same vocabulary. So maybe two graphs. That's another possible structure is a graph. And we have a base from, we have a map from the base of one function onto the base of another. Onto means it is one-to-one. And every element on the right is covered. We say that such a map is an isomorphism if it commutes with every basic structure of the original structure. What does it mean, commutes? So suppose you want to compute I of F for some arguments. Okay. So what you can do, you can, of course, compute F, this value, and then take map of that value. But alternatively, what you can do, you can first map the arguments and then compute F on the right. And the result should be the same. So if you think about it, then what it says that we just say which element corresponds to what element, and we say that functions behave in exactly the same way. So as structures, they behave in identical way. The only difference between these two structures is the nature of the elements. But it's something we want to abstract away from. Okay. Don't be shy to interrupt with questions.
I actually do have one question.
Okay.
I do have one question. It actually goes back a little bit to sequential time. I was kind of thinking about it some more as you're talking about sort of the second postulate. But does sequential time kind of assume some sort of global viewer that can label states and transitions? So like in systems where it's difficult to have such a global viewer, like for example, you have a distributed algorithm, does it assume kind of like a global viewer that can view all the different nodes they're processing?
Okay, good question. We consider today only sequential algorithm. Everything happens locally. So problem doesn't arise. When you go to to distributed computations, the problem indeed arises. So are there global states or not? That's a very interesting problem. People have different views, but it's delayed to another lecture. Today just doesn't arise. Okay, now we are prepared to formulate a postulate, but questions keep me honest, and also they raise good points. So it actually was a good question, that sequential algorithms are algorithms that are computed in one place, and you do have a global point of view on that algorithm. Mm-hmm. So here is a way to see a state. What are the states? And let me first say a few words informally. For me, a state is informally, it's information that you need so that in addition to the program, this information determines the whole future development. So if you know this state and you know the program of your algorithm, that you know the next state and the state after that. Mm-hmm. So the state is comprehensive. Sometimes in computing, people little portion of a state which they want to zoom in and they call it the state. So here the state is comprehensive. It's the whole state. So states are structures of the same vocabulary. So if you take any algorithm and see over what kind of data structures it operates, you can always describe it as state as a structure. So we have a vast experience in this direction. Different initial states may have very different bases, but when you fix an initial state, then the base will be preserved. Okay? And you say, how come? Suppose you create a new element. Suppose you build a tree, and now your tree grows. So how can I claim that it's the same base? Now think, where do we take the new elements from? You know, you're not rushing, you know, to a store to buy a new element from outside. So in the mathematical world, that element was somewhere there. So maybe in kind of reserve. So you pull it from reserve and put it on the tree. So now, and this is the abstract part, that set of states is closed under isomorphism. So if you have an isomorphism from a state to a structure, that structure is also a state. And if that state was initial, then that structure is an initial state. And in a sense, we don't want to distinguish between isomorphic structures. We look at them as sort of isomorphic presentation of sort of true state. And this is the second part of this third bullet. If you have an isomorphism from state X to state Y, and then, so you have state X, state Y, there is an isomorphism, and then you do a step, and you do step here, the isomorphism survives. Okay. So isomorphism says which element here corresponds to which element there. And the structure is the same, in the sense functions behave in exactly the same way. So the only difference is the nature of these elements, which we don't want to know. So let's consider an Euclidean algorithm that we looked at before. So what are the states here? So naturally here is a state is this arithmetic with true, false, and def on the side. But the vocabulary is a little bit different because the vocabulary should reflect what we use. So for example, here we use difference without programming it. So it means the difference is sort of given to us. It's a part of our vocabulary. And we also have function max and function mean. Now, A, B, and D are nullary functions. Notice that their values change. So these are so-called dynamic functions. Now, max, it doesn't change. Max has a fixed meaning. Difference has a fixed meaning. But A, B, and D change their meaning. D is initially undefined and eventually gets the the GCD of A and B. And A and B are modified, or may be modified, at every step. So I spoke a little bit already. So again, you can say the structure is too much or too little. Now, with the more dangerous for us is the argument that structure is too little. So maybe there are algorithms whose states are richer. No. Now, we have by now quite a substantial experience in the literature, and people who work in this area looked up at great many algorithms, and the notion of structure always suffices. Okay.
Yeah. The sample of the GCD you have on slide 24, right, the Euclid algorithm, it's kind of interesting that you sort of just sketch the surface there of like the comma operator here, which seems like very, very important in this particular notation. Because you're saying the comma operator on the left and the right. You're basically, do you have two parallel computations here where A and B are not quite changing yet? Because you're saying, you know, A becomes the max of A and B becomes the min of A and B.
Thanks. Good
question. You know, how does that really compute? Because like I see multiple states intertwined here.
So the question is, in what notation it's written? So in what programming language? So I do kind of simultaneous assignment. And this is informal description, and we'll get a formal description of the same algorithm soon. But in this informal description, the meaning is that there are two assignments, and they are made simultaneously. Neither of them comes first. So one way to think about it, you evaluate the right part. So in a given state, you have A and B, and you compute the max of A minus B and B, and you compute the mean of these two values. So you get two new values. When you computed them, then you change A and B, and you are in a new state. So this is informal notation. I don't refer to any programming language. But we will formalize it soon. Okay, now we come to the more difficult, technically, axiom. Axiom and postulate, I use them interchangeably. It's the same. Postulates and axioms are the same thing. So the first postulate was pretty obvious. It reflects how do we view algorithms. And most people view algorithms as transition systems. And so there's not much more there. The second postulate builds on logic tradition. So logic has this notion of structure, and it was designed for similar reasons. So logicians and mathematicians use it in static situations to describe various static mathematical realities. Now, a state is such a static mathematical reality. Now, there's something unusual that our structures evolve and change. Typically in mathematics, if you study arithmetic or you study Hilbert space, so it doesn't change. It's there. It's eternal. And we here parts of the state and change, evolve. But somewhat advance was prepared by development of logic throughout centuries. Now, this third postulate took me many years to figure out how to say that, as Kolmogorov said, algorithms compute in steps of bounded complexity. What's the complexity of a step? And how do you bound it? So in fact, the solution that I will explain in a moment bounds the complexity without actually measuring it. But we can also measure if necessary. So again, I was a little bit ahead of myself. Right. So how do you bound step complexity? Okay. So now we will be using the notion of structure in a way that mathematicians and logicians don't, because there is a static notion. So we look at a structure as a state. So in each structure, we have locations. So what's a location? You take the name from the vocabulary, the name of a function. Suppose that function happens to be J array. Remember, functions could be unary, binary, ternary, also nullary. So J may be 0, 1, 2, whatever. Okay. So it's a name of a vocabulary function and a tuple of arguments. So here is a kind of mixture. This is a name and these are true elements of a structure. And this thing we think about it as a location. So if it's location, what lives inside? What do you put inside that location? You take the interpretation of that name in our structure, that function f, and compute it at this tuple, and you get certain value. Okay. Now, locations can be updated. So we take this function f and change it sort of on one point. Such a tuple is a point from the point of your function on which it defines. And so we can take a new value for this function and put into this location. Okay. This corresponds to changing the value of this function at that point. That's a location update. So now let's consider what happens. Turns out that whatever happens during this one step can be described as by a set of such location updates. So suppose we have a state X of an algorithm in question, some algorithm. Okay, and we see what is the delta, what changes should be made to X to arrive to the next state. Okay. And the delta is this: consider all locations whose content is different. Some location has not changed. So for example, we have in Euclidean example, there is a function max. This function didn't change, so as far as the max locations will not appear here. But some locations do change. So for example, A in that example could get a new value. Okay. And so we collect all these updates, and that's a delta. So if we know the preceding state X and we know delta, we can compute next state. Okay. So now we are ready to formulate this the most technical of the three postulates. So what we want to say that the complexity of the step is bounded. Let me give it another way to see it. So we spoke that locally you can look at the algorithm as happens here, okay, a global view of an algorithm. You can also may have even more local point of view. Imagine you are a little ant and there is a huge state and you are within this state and you see only small portion of it. That's typically what happens to an algorithm. So an algorithm works on a vast state and changes only a few things. Okay. So what this postulate says intuitively, that our sequential, traditional, classic algorithms explore only bounded part of a state, and that's the bound. Now, Kolmogorov is not there to argue him with whether it would fit to what he had in mind, but I think he would agree. So here's an algorithm formally. For any algorithm, there is a finite collection of expressions. Logicians call them terms. That explains the letter T. Terms or expressions in the vocabulary of the structure. So the vocabulary of the structure has functions. And using this function, you can create various expressions, like max of A minus B, comma B. That's what's one of expressions. So there is a finite set of expressions which depends on algorithm, but not on state. So it's fixed for the given algorithm. Now I take two states, X and Y. What I want to say, that the algorithm doesn't see anything. It only evaluates these expressions, which I typically call critical. The only thing it does, it evaluates these critical expressions, and depending on their values, decides what to do, what to change. Nothing else. And that's what the algorithm says. It says, if you have two states, X and Y, and they agree on these expressions, so these critical expressions have the same value in state X and in state Y, then the deltas are the same. So the algorithm doesn't compute the whole new state. It's too big. It only computes the delta. So typically, these critical expressions are pretty obvious. So in our algorithms are those which underlined yellow here. So consider two states. In our simple case, let's see, how can I make those states different? For example, I can imagine that D has different value in different states. It's not forbidden to me. But if this inequality has the same value in both states, say in both states true, or in both states false, and if these expressions have exactly the same values, then I will do exactly the same thing. I will assign A this expression, I will assign to B that expression, and I will assign D. Nothing else. If this is true, then that's the only thing which I will do. I will leave D unchanged. Now, if this is false, so if A and B in fact equal, then I will assign A to D, and if I want the same delta, then my states better agree on A. Does that make sense? Okay, now with three postulates in hand, we can define algorithms formally. So here's the definition. A sequential or small step algorithm is any object that satisfies the three postulates. That's the idea of axiomatic definitions. You don't say what the object is if it satisfies the axioms. So one can argue with the postulates, but I actually would be interested to hear arguments if people disagree. Until now, I haven't. So this paper was published in year 2000, and for this 10, 11 years, I didn't have any disagreements. But if there are, I would love to hear them. Another objection could be, okay, you have three postulates, maybe we need seven more. And for this, I know the answer. So we don't need any more postulates. Why? Let's see, we have 10 minutes. Will we do it?
Let's do it.
Okay. Okay. So here is one slide definition of a programming language. So syntax is, you have assignments. These are expressions. I use the word T because in logic expressions called terms. So this is a usual assignment. There's a usual conditional, if then else. There's a somewhat unusual command, do in parallel. So you have already programs or rules. Rules and programs will be used interchangeably. So you have rule 1, rule 7, say. And now you say, do these rules in parallel. Okay, that's the whole syntax. You write starting from assignments, you can write using these two constructs, you can write more complicated programs. Now, what's the meaning? The meaning of this, of an assignment, is a single location update. So the location, left side gives the location, and the right side gives the new value. In fact, the new value may happen to be identical with the old value, then there's no the update becomes a kind of, may become trivial. So you have one update or maybe none. There is a little controversy, should we count such trivial updates as updates? And in sequential case, the natural answer seems to be no. When we go to distributed case, it becomes important. Because even if I do a trivial update, I still occupy this location. And so I don't allow other people to deal with this location. So doing parallel means, so in the meaning of every program will be the location updates it produces. And here it say, do them all. Independently. Do you have any problem?
So when I look at the deltas, I just wonder what happens when they update the same location, for example.
When they what?
When they update the same location.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you asked that. Indeed, what may happen, imagine we have doing parallel two updates. A gets 7 and A gets 11. Then what? The result will be a crash. Algorithm crashes. Now, many times people told me, why would you crash? Do something. Say, non-deterministically choose one of them. Or use some other rule. But remember what was my goal. My goal is to prove representation theorem, that for every algorithm, there is a behaviorally equivalent abstract state machine. And some algorithms crash. So if my abstract state machines don't crash, I have no chance to to prove representation theorem. So in fact, we need the possibility of a crash. Okay, good question, in the right place. And then there's an obvious conditional command. So this was I defined programs, kind of programming language. An ASM, I think about an ASM as a machine. So it have a program. The vocabulary is given by the program, just whatever functions are mentioned there. Yes?
So back to the previous slide, I also didn't see any sort of sequential composition rule.
Ah, thank you. Another good question. The whole program describes one step. The whole program describes one step, which has to be sort of implicitly repeated over and over until the algorithm stops. Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of iteration, implicit iteration.
Mm-hmm. What does stop mean?
Ah, so when do you stop? You stop when you crash, or when you produce an update, it's empty. Then you stop. So if I think about this as a machine, like glorified Turing machine, then in addition to the program, it has set of structures and initial structures. And every abstract state machines that we defined is an algorithm in the sense it satisfies the three postulates. Okay. So it's obviously a transition system. The states are structures by definition, the way defined here. A set of these structures. And critical terms, you know, we may not get a minimal set of critical terms this way, but a set of critical terms can be obtained by taking all the expressions and their sub-expressions that appear in the program. And now we have this representation theorem. Now we can formulate it. Everything is defined, so it makes complete sense. Now proof is a different story. We're not going into the proof. Yeah.
More questions. So back to the little definition of the language you have here.
Definition of?
Of ASM. Mm-hmm. And so you have the parallel construct. Is K bounded?
So, yes. So. Yes and no. I'll
in the second rule, that is. Sorry.
Yeah. Right. Let me explain what I mean. K can be any, but K cannot be a variable. Okay. And any is the same as 2. So suppose I want to do 17. Do in parallel R1, R17. I can always do it in parallel R1 and R2, and then this in parallel with R3. So K could be taken just being 2. So this notation is a kind of compromise. On one side, you want to be simple and elegant. On the other one, you want to be sufficiently expressive that you can actually write formulas. But 2 would suffice, but K cannot be a variable. Yes?
So another question is, why in the semantics definition, the right-hand column, I assume it's just because the space on the slide, why doesn't it have the crashing part of it encoded in the semantics there? Is that...
Why it does not have?
Yeah, so I don't see anything in the semantics that kind of implies the crashing part.
What will happen, consider this case that A gets 7 and in parallel, so in parallel we do 2 assignments. A gets 7 and gets 11. So what happens, so here we will have update A7, and here we'll have update A11. And we'll get a contradicting set of updates. So which I skipped.
Contradicting from whose point of view? Like from the union operator you have there?
Right. So let me give a formal definition. So suppose we have a set of updates. So it's like, again, it's a good question. For brevity, I skip this. So we have a set of updates. Now, this set can be consistent. every update is an update of a different location. It's a consistent set. If in this update set there are two updates which update the same location to different values, such update set is inconsistent and it leads to a crash. So implicitly, crash is here via the notion of inconsistent set of updates.
Now, if you do have two locations, or the same location updated twice with the same value, that doesn't crash
That's
the
fine.
Program, but right. Is that an underlying problem in the program at some point in the future? Because, like, you have that parallel thing sitting there that updates twice the same location. Maybe it's just getting incredibly lucky that at this point it doesn't crash.
Right.
Like, is there predictive power in updating location that
right.
can be statically verified?
Yes, good questions. So now we study sequential algorithm. And sequential algorithm, it's like one agent. It's one mind. So intuitively, it first computes an update set. And if it has the same pair, you know, A gets 7, it says, well, I'm not interested in multi-set. I'm interested in a set of updates. It just identifies them and there is one. Now, if you have a distributed situation and you are an agent, I'm a different agent, you want to update A to 7, I want to update A to 7, we may clash even though we try to do the same thing. So it shows various pitfalls which arise when you go to distributed situation. But in sequential situation, it doesn't arise. So identical updates will be just collapsed, and sort of if you think about the executor of algorithm, he will just collapse them. Yeah.
So all this is encoded in kind of the notion of what union means over deltas, right? Is that?
Yes, it's a standard mathematical union.
Okay.
So this is a set, and this union of sets. It's the most standard notion in mathematics.
But in particular, we're saying that if you have a union where you have union over these pairs of locations and values, that if the location part of the tuple is the same but the value part is different, then that's kind of like leads to undefined results. Is that kind of what we're saying?
So let's see. Notice this. Even in this set case, in the simplest case, we have a set. So one say, what's the difference between one update and a set containing this one update? So mathematicians distinguish. So this technically is a set. Now, I don't know how to unite updates. Or this is a different story. We take a union of sets. Mm-hmm. So each one of this R1, RK is a set of updates. So when we take a union, we get another set of updates. This set may have various updates of the same location. Those which give the same value, even though they came from different parts, we produce a set, not a multi-set. So intuitively, they will be identified. Now, if one of them wanted to update location to something, and another wanted has an update which updates the same location to something else, then the resulting update set is inconsistent and will get a crash. Does make sense? Okay. And I think I'm done. I promised Euclidean version. This is written the same Euclidean algorithm. Notice the whole program gives one step. And just to show that we not always describe very simple algorithms, here is an algorithm that operates with continuous functions, and we saw it many times, and here is an ASM program for it. Oh, one theoretical application. So with Nachum Dershowitz of Tel Aviv University, we succeeded to derive Church-Turing thesis from this three postulate plus one additional, which we needed for the purpose. That's it. Yeah.
One more question from me. So, again, going back to the ASM thing and the parallel thing and all that kind of stuff, the consistency that you need to have in the updates after the union of the deltas. If you were to just kind of change what that consistency meant and you accepted different values for the same location in the result set, you kind of computed based on having multiple values for the same thing, don't you get kind of some sort of like all possibilities for some non-deterministic system as kind of the output of that? Again, you can reach some sort of fixed point and hopefully and then you're done. But I mean, is that...
So let's see. I mentioned last time that algorithms are intrinsically deterministic. And non-deterministic algorithms are really interactive. If you remember, the example was from Yogi Berra. If you come to a fork in a road, take it. Yeah. So here we deal with deterministic algorithms. I need one value. Multitude will not do. So there are some ways to, for example, I could non-deterministically choose one value. Or if my world is ordered, maybe I take the very first value in some order. Mm-hmm. But there are various ways to generalize it to a non-deterministic case. Okay. Notice, for me, non-determinism means that somebody is in charge. Maybe dumb luck, maybe chance, but somebody has to flip that coin. Mm-hmm. And I think, taking into account time constraint, we will not go to non-deterministic algorithms, which is an interesting story.